It is October 19th, 2022, and this is the John Lothian News Daily Update. I am John Lothian. This podcast gives an overview of content from the John Lothian newsletter, including commentary from our hits and takes section, stories from the first read section, a listing of the top three stories from yesterday's newsletter, and of the first three stories in the lead section of today's JLN. This podcast is a production of John Lothian News, home of MarketsWiki and MarketsWiki Education. We encourage you to learn about the history of trading from our Open Outcry Traders History Project or the Path to Electronic Trading video series at johnlothiannews.com. Here are the hits and takes comments from today's JLN. Ralph DeNunzio, who was the youngest chairman of the New York Stock Exchange at age 39 in 1971 and the last unpaid chairman of the NYSE, has died at the age of 90. Back in 1973, DeNunzio and William J. Casey, who had served as SEC chairman under President Nixon, faced a U.S. Senate committee together for different nominations. Casey, who would be Ronald Reagan's campaign manager and then CIA head, was nominated to be president of the Export-Import Bank. DeNunzio was nominated for the Securities Investor Protection Corporation, an organization he had helped create through an industry committee he had led. DeNunzio was the chairman of Kidder Peabody & Company when an insider trading scandal involving Ivan Boesky rocked the firm. Even though DeNunzio was not implicated, his leadership was questioned and he stepped down after 34 years at the firm he had joined in 1953. While he was chairman of the NYSE, he oversaw the merger of two financially troubled firms, Francis I. DuPont & Company and Goodbody & Company. He also helped reorganize the NYSE, which created a public board of directors and created a full-time paid chief executive, leaving him as the last unpaid NYSE chairman. The Bank of Ireland has introduced paid menopause leave for employees, whereby staff can get up to 10 days of paid leave to help prevent women from dropping out of the workforce. Meanwhile, U.S. women in the workforce earn 83.4 cents for each dollar a man makes, according to a U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics report Tuesday. The New York Times has a story titled, "Bread Prices Skyrocket as Inflation Grips Europe." The subheadline is, "The elevated costs of flour, nuts, eggs, and even electricity are forcing bakers to increase their prices and cut their production." Of course, revolutions have started over the high cost of bread before. Just saying. The New York Times also has an opinion piece titled "The Last Thatcherite," whose headline on the front page of the Times is, "They believed in markets, but the markets didn't believe in them." It is the story of UK Prime Minister Liz Truss's faith in a fantasy version of the free market. David Nealis is joining Eden Global Capital as president in Saigon, Ho Chi Minh City, and will be splitting his time between Vietnam and the USA. Neil Leston has started a new role as co-head Americas Index Sales for FTSE Russell. Cboe's Europe, Lori Ann Capper and Elena Patamova were winners in the Markets Choice European Women in Finance Awards last week, hosted by Markets Media. Coinbase commissioned a documentary about its early days through its public listing. It's titled "Coin, a Founder Story." FX Markets US is meeting October 20th in person at etc.venues360madison in New York City. Senior FX traders from asset management firms, investment bankers, corporates, exchanges, hedge funds, insurance firms, pension funds, and prime brokers attend to gain insight and critical analysis on the latest developments and issues shaping the future of the FX market. You can view the agenda and register with the link in today's newsletter. Here are more stories from the first read section of today's JLN. Our MarketsWiki education short of the day is Peter Nabik. The implied job description in finance. Have you ever lost $1 million in 4.5 seconds? Neither have we. Peter Nabik, however, once wrote an algorithmic trading program that did exactly that when one of his teammates misplaced a decimal on a minor tweak to the algo, although the blame could have easily gone to Nabik and or one of his colleagues, none of them was fired over the incident. Why? For one, though the tuition was steep, each received a valuable education from the incident. Plus, each team member accepted responsibility for the actions, meaning none tried to say, "It's not my job." You can watch this video on johnlothiannews.com. Here's a story from Vital Law by a former colleague of ours, Suzanne Cosgrove. SEC News and Speeches. Commissioner says moment is ripe for SEC to ensure investors have relevant ESG data. The SEC is reviewing thousands of comments submitted to the commission on its recent proposals to facilitate comparable ESG disclosures and is continuing to meet with stakeholders to receive public feedback. Commissioner Lazarga said, ESG is a dynamic market sector that generates enormous interest among investors, but it also has become a lively topic that has moved beyond financial circles. SEC Commissioner Jaime Lazarga said Monday, several U.S. states are making headlines for their push against ESG investing, while other states are proactive in their ESG investments. The SEC's proposals were made against this backdrop, he noted. They seek to provide investors with objective metrics that provide the highest degree of comparability, he said. I believe the proposed rules are a significant step forward in getting investors this information. The comment from Sarah Rudolph. Former JLN editor Suzanne Cosgrove is keeping her eagle eye on the latest issues in ESG regulation, an increasingly important issue for investors. Here's another story. This one is from YouTube. How can we fix inflation with economist Steve Hanke, the problem with John Stewart podcast? John is joined by Steve Hanke, a professor of applied economics at the Johns Hopkins University, for a chat about why we find ourselves in this current inflation disaster and how we might get out of it. They get into whether the Fed is blowing it, the role of money supply, and whether anyone is looking out for the little guy in all of this monetary maneuvering. They don't always agree, but John manages to score a passing grade from the professor. My comment. I guess you can't have Gary Gensler on every episode. Here's another story, this one from Bloomberg. Americans reclaim 60 million commuting hours in remote work perk. Instead of being stuck in traffic, workers are getting more rest and spending additional time with family. Americans who are working from home have reclaimed 60 million hours that they used to spend commuting to an office each day. They're now using that time to get more sleep instead. That's the takeaway from research by the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, which analyzed data from the America Time Use Survey to see what U.S. workers spent their time on when they weren't stuck on a crowded train or locked in traffic. The main finding, employees spent fewer total hours working and substantially more on sleep and leisure. My comment. I am not sure what I am going to do with my 60 million hours. Any suggestions? Here's another story from Bloomberg. Offices in New York nationwide hit peak post-pandemic occupancy. New York office buildings were 48% full last week, Castle says. 10-city national average increases but remains below 50%. Offices in New York and other big U.S. cities last week filled to their highest levels since the pandemic hit, but occupancy still hasn't surpassed 50% in most places. New York offices tracked by security firm Castle Systems were 47.8% full in the week ended October 12th, up from about 44% in the previous 2 weeks, each of which had school holidays that kept some workers homebound. That's the highest occupancy since early March 2020, right before COVID-19 lockdowns took effect. Castle's 10-city average occupancy also reached a post-pandemic high at 49%, boosted by cities such as Austin, Texas, where offices are nearly two-thirds full. My comment, are the office buildings half empty or half full? Are you an optimist or a pessimist? Here's a story from Scientific American. The U.S. just lost 26 years worth of progress on life expectancy. With a few notable exceptions, such as during the 1918 influenza pandemic, World War II, and the HIV crisis, life expectancy in the U.S. has had gradual upward trajectory over the past century. But that progress has steeply reversed in the past 2 years as COVID and other tragedies have cut millions of lives short. My comment, how can this be? I just gained 60 million hours of my life back because of commuting. Here's another story, this one from the Wall Street Journal. The stock market had a terrible year. These Americans aren't bothered. Some say they can't afford to put money into the market, while others think there are better routes to wealth. As stocks plunged this year, many retirement savers had the fight to urge to check their 401k balance, reminding themselves that investing is still a steady, gradual path to prosperity. Many Americans don't have to resist that compulsion. They aren't in the market for the long term. They aren't in it at all. According to a Gallup survey from this spring, 41% of Americans say they have no money invested in the stock market. Many of them can't afford to invest. 75% of those with a household income under $40,000 a year say they have no investments, per Gallup. For others, it is a choice. 11% of Americans with a household income of at least $100,000 a year have nothing in stocks. My comment, they are sitting in cash, a smart investment for these volatile times. But for most of them, they are always sitting in cash. Very little of it, unfortunately. Here are the top three stories from Tuesday's JLN. Our top story Tuesday was Bloomberg's clean energy has a tipping point and 87 countries have reached it. Second was Business Insider's the stock market crash is exposing Wall Street's biggest charlatans, which was our number one story Monday. Third was a tie between retirement can mean a loss of identity, how to bring happiness to your next act. And for the third time in the top three, revealed Exxon boss snapped at employees during virtual town hall and told them to work for Amazon if they were unhappy, with workers scolded for not holding handrails in offices, from the Daily Mail. Here are the top three stories from the lead section of today's JLN. The first is from the Wall Street Journal. Wall Street traders or Washington officials? Sometimes it's hard to tell. 7 dozen senior executive branch employees disclosed a total of 80,000 stock and fund trades in the past 6 years. It's the kind of rapid-fire trading you see on Wall Street. Hundreds of stock market wagers, sometimes peppered with options and other aggressive trades. But this wasn't done on behalf of professional traders. The transactions came from about 7 dozen senior federal government officials who disclosed that they or their families each made more than 500 trades from 2016 to 2021. That totals more than 80,000 transactions while these officials worked in the government. Here's another story. This is the obituary of Ralph DeNunzio from the New York Times. Ralph DeNunzio, Wall Street chieftain, is dead at 90. He was chairman of the New York Stock Exchange and rose to lead the venerable securities firm Kidder Peabody, but stepped down after it was caught up in a 1980s insider trading scandal. Ralph DeNunzio, who reached the Wall Street pinnacles of power with chairmanships of the New York Stock Exchange and the venerable securities firm Kidder Peabody and Company, where he spent 34 years until stepping down after it was caught up in an insider trading scandal, died on Monday at his home in Greenwich, Connecticut. He was 90. The cause was heart failure, his son Peter said. Setting aside aspirations for a sports broadcasting career, Mr. D'Annunzio went straight from Princeton to Kidder, starting as a trainee in 1953 and rising to chief executive and chairman. At Kidder, he headed an industry task force that resulted in the creation in 1970 of the Security Investor Protection Corporation, a body that protects investors against loss from failing brokers. Here's another story. This is from the Wall Street Journal. Day traders go back to their day jobs as stock market swoons. Individual investors are placing fewer trades at Charles Schwab, Morgan Stanley, and Robinhood. The pandemic day trading boom has gone bust. A swooning stock market and high inflation has sapped individual investors' enthusiasm for buying and selling stocks. That was on display in earnings reports and financial disclosures from some of the biggest retail brokerages in recent weeks. The average daily number of retail trades handled by Charles Schwab fell to 5.52 million in the third quarter, the lowest level since it acquired TD Ameritrade Holding in late 2020. At Morgan Stanley, retail traders placed an average of 805,000 trades a day in the third quarter. That was down 15% from a year earlier and the lowest since the investment bank bought E-Trade Financial Corp in late 2020. Thank you for listening to the John Lothian News Daily Update. Please consider telling a friend about our podcast, and if you haven't yet, please write a review on Apple Podcasts. This helps new listeners find us. Also, if you aren't already a subscriber to the daily John Lothian newsletter email, you can get a free 90-day trial at johnlothiannews.com/trial. Have a great day and stay safe and treat people the same way you want to be treated, with respect, equality, and justice. This has been John Lothian. Goodbye.